Rory McIlroy makes his PGA Tour debut this week, and he's trying to do something he's never accomplished: win at the same venue in back-to-back years. We'll have a report from the first signature event of 2026 at Pebble Beach. And Rory might not even be the most popular guy back in action this week on the Monterey Peninsula. Roger Maltby is behind the microphone again for Golf Channel. We'll check in with the great man ahead of his return. And we'll also be joined by the man Jack Lemmon carried for years in the old Crosby Pro-Am at Pebble Beach. Peter Jacobson will join us. He has great memories of Pebble Beach and some opinions on why it matters now more than ever. Golf Today starts now.
Golf Today.
Welcome into Golf Today. I'm Eamon Lynch alongside Rex Hoggard. It is Pebble Beach week on the PGA Tour. Rex, of course, here. Actually brought his wife to Pebble Beach on their honeymoon. It's actually been downhill for Mrs. Hoggard ever since the honeymoon now.
I think that goes without saying. It's been downhill for her for a lot of different reasons, just not because we played. I played golf on my honeymoon at Pebble Beach. It's my favorite time of year. We had this debate, I think, late last summer. The idea that I would argue the Scottish Open and the Open Championship are the best fortnight in golf. But you can make a really good argument this week and next, L.A., very close second.
Pebble Beach and Rip, probably the two best courses in all of California right there. Well, it is the first signature event of the 2026 PGA Tour season. You can catch live first-round coverage of the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am beginning Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern time, right here on Golf Channel. And, of course, a signature event means a stacked field, and we can start at the very top, where number one Scottie Scheffler is headlining. He almost took the title at the WM Phoenix Open a couple of days ago. Earlier this year, he won the American Express for his 20th career PGA Tour victory. And world number two, Rory McIlroy, he's making his PGA Tour debut this week. He's back at Pebble Beach to defend his title from a year ago. That's when he beat Shane Lowry by two strokes, and that was his 27th career victory on tour.
Justin Rose is also back in action this week. The now world number three already has a victory under his belt in 2026 as he won the Farmers Insurance Open a few weeks ago in dominant fashion. Rose is also a past champion in this event, winning back in 2023. And it is a stacked field this week at Pebble Beach. Just take a look at what we have here. 18 of the top 20 players in the official world golf ranking, 7 past winners of this event, and 8 past FedEx Cup champions, all in the field. Now let's go straight out to our very own Todd Lewis, who's on the ground at Pebble Beach. Todd, what's the buzz?
Well, the buzz is, as you guys were talking about, the excitement of the first signature event of 2025. And you mentioned those top players that are in the field. Scottie Scheffler out playing a practice round right now. Justin Rose is on the range behind me sharpening his game. Rory McIlroy is expected to be on property a little later today. 18 of the top 20 in the official world golf ranking, as you guys mentioned, in the field. The only two not here, Justin Thomas, who is recovering from back surgery, and Patrick Reed, who is not eligible but will probably be here on the PGA Tour next year. Now, besides those who are in the field and in all the signature events for 2026, there are those that have an opportunity this week. The Aeon Swing 5 that made the field, those are from performances this year. And then there's the Aeon Next 10. That's from the fall of last year, those who finished 51 through 60. But there's another caveat here to the AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am, and the fact that this is a field of 80 Pro-Am teams, and to feel the field, they had to go past 60 in the FedEx Cup fall standing. So there are some players that are actually in just this event, and we'll see how they perform this week to see where they are next week. So a great opportunity for the lesser names on the PGA Tour to have a great week, earn some some FedEx Cup points, and kind of climb in the standings.
Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at it as another tournament. Obviously, it's nice to know that that I'll be here through Sunday. So that's a little nice thing to have in the back of your mind. But you just have to approach it like it's any other tournament. Yes, there's more points available and other nice things that come with the signature events. But you just have to approach it like it's a regular week. Just another golf tournament, 4 rounds of golf. Nothing else is really changing besides maybe field size. So you just have to approach it that way and just take it as anything else.
Absolutely. I think especially rounds 1 and 2, where you normally may be fighting for a cut, that's not a thing. Like, you have 72 holes, and even if you maybe make a few bogeys early on. You know, we have a lot of holes left to get back in this thing. And yeah, I think that that's a good mindset. You don't have to be super aggressive from the start. You just kind of plot your way around. I think that's what you have to do out here anyway. And then, yeah, hopefully you make some birdies along the way.
I was just trying to finish off the year, you know, keeping my card and to be able to, you know, add a couple extra events like this and, you know, in a field where it's highly touted, but at the same time, my game feels good and I'm ready to go. So it's a great opportunity for me to just kind of get my feet wet with it too. But also I've had a lot of success on this golf course and excited to get going here for sure.
Is it challenging not to press this week?
A little bit, but I would say like the pressing for me, honestly, is usually to make the cut on Friday. So then I can kind of press on Saturday, Sunday type of thing. So, you know, I think I'm going to be a little bit more easy going Thursday, Friday, you know, give myself a couple more chances and not feel like I got to press too much at the start. And then, you know, hopefully give myself an opportunity on the weekend to just kind of keep going and move in the right direction for sure.
Anytime you can get the majority of the best players in the world together in one event, you know, that says a lot about the quality of the tournament and kind of, you know, the quality of all of these events that they're trying to kind of put together. But I think it's going to be, you know, hopefully a pretty good test and see whose game is kind of stacking up where they want it to. And, you know, obviously there's elevated kind of points and money that goes along with it. But I think the big thing is, you know, you got a lot of really, really good players all in the same spot competing at the same time. And, you know, if you want to play well in major championships and the like, you got to kind of prove yourself against them anyway. So we'll see how it stacks up this week.
Yeah, 700 FedEx Cup points to the winner to kind of give you a reference point. 700 points were 83rd about on the PGA Tour FedEx Cup final standings from 2025. And Ryan Gerard is here in the field. He is going to be in all the signature events for 2026. He's never played Pebble Beach. As a matter of fact, I talked to him just a few moments ago. He's going out to play his first 18 ever at Pebble. He's so much looking forward to it. It's been a good year so far for Ryan Gerard. He's third in the FedEx Cup standings. He's playing Pebble Beach today for the very first time. He's a North Carolina alum. His Tar Heels beat Duke over the weekend with a last-second shot. It is good to be Ryan Gerard right now, guys.
Todd, is that, I have to ask, is that Duke blue or North Carolina blue that you're wearing right now? I'm asking for a friend.
See, I'm trying to be neutral. This is North Carolina blue, but I do have some Duke. This is blue and white, dark blue and white. Yeah. So, you know, I'm representing the entire state. I don't have Wake or NC State on, but sorry, guys. Maybe that's tomorrow.
Appreciate your time. We'll have you back on the show later.
So this week at Pebble Beach is, you know, it's significant as Todd talks about. The format is very different as well. I'm curious what it looks like going forward, though, because you can see various threads of conversations that are happening on the PGA Tour. AT&T is clearly not going anywhere. They're a loyal sponsor to the tour. And Pebble Beach will be on the schedule. I'm curious to see down the road if AT&T at Pebble Beach in this format is on the schedule, because there are also conversations about a desire among players to finish the season, the FedEx Cup, at more iconic golf courses. Mm-hmm. There's a desire among the tour to see the playoffs finish prime time in the East Coast by being played on the West Coast. And when you put those two together, you kind of point to a place like Pebble Beach as a potential finale for the tour as well, which would be a shame in a way. I know you've had this conversation. You were asking guys about it yesterday, that Pebble would be better in June, July, August when the weather's better. I say to hell with that. I love watching these guys get blown sideways on this golf course. You go back to 1998, Tom Watson led going into the final round. The final round was washed out in February. They played it in August. They all came back for one day to finish the tournament back then. There's nothing I love to see more than professional pampered golfers being sent out in weather that you would otherwise only send a cattle out in.
Why should I be shocked that you were going to be the agent of chaos on this front? I should have known that's immediately where you were going to go. I think we're going to get some pebble weather today. We'll hear from Todd later about that. I think I love the idea that we're starting this conversation with Pebble Beach is going to be on the schedule in 2027 and beyond, regardless of what happens. Riviera will say the same thing. It really just matters where they're going to slot into this new world. And I will say that when you look at what the players want, when you look at what the fans want later in the year, it would be a better venue if you sent the Tour Championship, for example, example, out west. You rotate it among these classic venues. It's going to be better for the players. It's going to be better for the fans to watch because it's going to be in prime time primarily. And the golf courses are going to be in better condition. However, I understand that the traditionalists are always going to fall back on they want Crosby weather. We're going to talk about it all week long. That's absolutely what they want. I get that. I'm just not sure it fits into the new model.
Somewhere in New Jersey, Mike Wan is sitting watching you thinking he's trying to cut in on the U.S. Open schedule here because that's traditionally, obviously, 2027. We're going to see a U.S. Open in June at Pebble Beach as well. It's also a bit of an imposition. The tour may not think so, but it's a bit of an imposition on that resort to ask them to give up a week of prime time revenue deeper in the year. There's a reason why this tournament is played in February, because no one else in their right mind is really going to go play Pebble in February and gamble on getting great weather, because it's so often not the case.
And this is a pie in the sky best case scenario that we talk about. When you sit down with a blank piece of paper experiment, is what I always call it, and I tell you to give me the 20 best events at the best times of year in the best markets with the best sponsors, you're going to point to that and say, yes, Pebble should be played in July or August. Torrey Pines probably could move to a different time of year. Certainly Los Angeles and Riviera. So I understand where people are coming from, that this is when you want to have it. Certainly, you're right. Pebble doesn't want to give up tee times during that time of year. But I don't think there's any arguing that it would be better if you rearrange the schedule.
True, but everything's going to be a compromise, as Brian Rolapp's probably about to find out. And Victor Hovland joins us now from Pebble Beach. Victor, it's good to see you. You won the U.S. Amateur out there at Pebble Beach. So I'm assuming you come back to this area with a lot of memories. But I'm wondering, did the game seem like it was more fun back then or a little more carefree than it is when you're actually doing it for a living now?
Yeah, it's definitely a little bit different. I just remember having my college golf coach on the bag, Alan Bratton, and we just had a blast and had so many friends in the field, you know, just fellow guys from college. And showing up to Pebble Beach, a place that I'd played a few college events, it was just really special. And winning the whole thing was just it's almost bizarre looking back on.
We were just talking about your victory last year at the Valspar Championship, and I was reading, you said something just clicked. There was one swing thought that you keyed into earlier in the week that kind of led you to victory. How often does that happen? And when you do get that feeling, do you feel like, yes, this is going to be my week?
Not often enough. I was kind of still in the soup a little bit at that point, and just come off from shooting 80 the week before at the Players Championship, and I missed a cut at Bay Hill and was really struggling. And I was with Grant Wade on the range, and we found something that at least was on the right track, and I felt like I at least could hit my irons a lot better. I was still really struggling off the tee, but thankfully, at Innisbrook, you don't have to hit the driver all that far. It's more of a positioning golf course, so I could just lean on my iron game, and I putted it absolutely incredible that week. So that certainly helped.
It seems every press conference you do, Victor, there's a lot of questions about swing mechanics, which isn't surprising because you're willing to answer them, and the answers are actually really interesting to listen to. But do you ever get weary of going down that rabbit hole and talking to the media all the time about the swing?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather not, to be honest with you. I'd rather just be showing up on the range and know where the ball's going. But at the same time, I don't really want to lie either. I'm just kind of speaking openly and honestly about my current situation, and those are my actual thoughts and emotions out there when I'm competing. And it's like, if I'm standing on the tee box and I have no idea where the ball's going with the driver, and that didn't used to be the case for most of my professional career and even amateur career, like I don't see the point in just pretending like everything's great and saying, no, it's fine, because then I'm just putting more pressure on myself. In a way, it's more alleviating pressure, just kind of telling you guys how things are, and I'm working on it and trying to figure it out.
Along those lines, we in the media have made a big deal about your pursuit of perfection. What does perfection in the golf swing mean to you?
I mean, not really searching for perfection in the terms of look. Obviously, we play this game and we're looking to perform. It's all about results. And to do that, you need to know where the ball is going to go. And back in the day, I had such a high level of repeatability. I knew exactly where the ball was going to start and where it was going to curve. and I might not hit the center of the face all the time, but the ball's going dead straight. Now, in order to do that, there's obviously mechanics involved, because when you swing and you look up and the ball is going everywhere, you can't just turn off your brain. You actually have to work on your mechanics to get to where you want to be. And that's kind of been the process the last couple of years, is that everything that I try to do to replicate some of the swings that I used to do feels awful. And then while you're playing tournaments every single week, almost, it's hard to trust those feels and almost play worse before you get better. And it's hard to commit to doing a thing like that if you're not sure you're going to play better in the long run. So it's a tough thing when you get out of whack and get out of sorts, because the current situation is not good enough, but you also have to perform right now. You have to play well. You have to get into the majors, get into the FedEx Cup playoffs. So there's just a lot of pressure. And when you're making swing changes, it's tough. It's just tough being in that position.
Even though you're searching, Victor, you've put a lot of consistent results on the board since last summer. And are you finding it frustrating that you haven't gotten a win in that time frame while you're working through the issues with your game?
I mean, sure, I'd like to be winning all the time, but the most frustrating thing is just that I'm not showing up to the golf course feeling confident. It's every single week, every single round, it's just kind of a battle, because when you've been driving it as poorly as I have, you're kind of at mercy to the coincidences of where the driver ends up. Sometimes when I swing it and the ball goes way right or way left, it can either be on grass and I can take advantage of my good iron play and hit it on the green and maybe make the putt and make birdie, or the same shot might end up in the water, out of bounds, or in a cactus, whatever it might be. And it's very stressful to be in that spot, versus before I could kind of almost not think about the results, or I could think about winning and expect to win or be constantly up in contention, because when I hit a shot and swung well, I knew where the ball was going to go. When I looked up, it was like, yep, confirmation that the ball's going where I wanted to. And now I can put my mind to try to compete and win golf tournaments. But that's not where I've been the past couple of years, unfortunately.
Victor, this is the first signature event of the season, and it starts a really busy stretch. 9 of the next 14 events are either signature events or majors. How challenging is that for a player?
I didn't hear you as well there.
Nine of the next 14 events are either majors or signature events. From a player's standpoint, that's a really condensed schedule. How challenging is that?
Yeah, it's a lot of golf, but it's pretty exciting. So hopefully, I mean, I do feel like my game is trending in the right direction and I'm constantly working on good stuff. So I'm just waiting for myself to turn a corner a little bit and then to have a bunch of good tournaments coming back to back to back and being in a good stretch. If I can find find my game in a good spot, then I think that's just great. So I'm looking forward to it.
Do you find yourself able to give any attention, or do you have any interest, Victor, in these broader conversations going on around what Brian Rolapp may or may not want to change on the PGA Tour going forward? Or are you just trying to focus on your game inside the ropes and leave that to others?
Yeah, I mean, I try to pay attention to hear and see what's going on, but at the end of the day, I'm not in the inner knowings, or I'm not in all those meetings. I don't know exactly what's going on. So from my perspective, it'd be a lot of speculation. And at the same time, it's like I really need to just sort my own game out. And if I play good golf, then I'm content with that. I'm happy with that. So, but I'm definitely trying to just pay attention and see what's going on, because I don't want to be completely outside of what's going on. I think it's every player's responsibility to have an opinion and kind of look at things and see where the organization is headed. So I'm trying to kind of do both things, but it's not all that easy.
One of those broader conversations came up last week. The PGA Tour introduced a new marketing campaign for the Players' Championship, and the tagline was, March is going to be major. The not-so-subtle context there is that it's going to become the fifth major. At least they hope it's going to become the fifth major. What are your thoughts on that?
Ooh, I mean, I think the Players' Championship is one of the It's one of the best fields in golf, if not the best field in golf, and it's a great golf course. I really like TPC Sawgrass. Super exciting tournament. I'm not sure if it needs to be any more than that. You know, it's, I think the four majors are great. Do we need one more major? In my opinion, I think four is enough, and just have the Players Championship as another great tournament. I think that's completely fine.
I'm curious what you're reading right now, Victor. We know you're widely read on a lot of different subjects, but what's on the bedside table at Pebble Beach this week?
I just finished a book called Being in Time by Martin Heidegger. So I like to read philosophy and kind of get into a lot of the historical books out there. And that book was maybe the most complicated book I've ever read. And I just started on Nietzsche, Thus Spoke Zarathustra. So I'm trying to just go through the classics because I'm not very well read. So I'm trying to educate myself.
Well, that's going to make the golf swing seem fairly simple by comparison, I think.
Exactly.
Well, enjoy your light reading this week and good luck. Thank you so much for taking the time, Victor.
We're pleased to be joined now by Roger. Roger, it's always great to have you on the show. What does it feel like to be getting back in the saddle?
I'm excited. I really am. And at my age, I don't get excited about much. So I've never worked with CBS as the weekend hosts of the event. So this will be a brand new experience for me. And of course, I'll get to see old colleagues, Frank and Nabilo and Dottie Pepper. And I haven't seen Jim Nantz in years. We've always been working opposite sides of schedules and whatnot. So it'll be great to see old friends and make some new ones.
Roger, I'm pretty sure this is just me, but I imagine you were sitting at home on Sunday, sitting on the couch, watching the action in Scottsdale, calling the shots, doing what you would normally do if you were walking on the golf course. Please tell me that's the fact.
That is the fact. I did watch. And it never seems to fail in providing exciting and bizarre moments at Scottsdale. So business as usual, I guess.
Roger, you've seen a lot of guys come and go through this game over the years. When you look at Chris Goddard, and you're going to be getting an up-close look at him this week in Pebble, do you see the next American superstar there?
Well, I don't know. I'm an old-school guy. I'm an old guy. And I like to see with my own eyes up close. That's why I love what I do, being on the ground and following the players, because I'm a fan, first and foremost. A former player, but a fan now. And I love seeing it hit, hearing it hit, watching the ball in flight. That's what gives me pleasure and gives me joy. And so I'm excited to see a guy like Chris Goddard. What a start he's had. It kind of reminds me of me. I had a fast start when I got on the tour. So, the power and whatnot that the players display now, they are so good. And I just get a thrill every time I watch them. I just scratch my head sometimes in amazement at the things they can do.
It's unlikely, though, that Chris Goddard's going to do what you do and leave one of your winner's checks behind at the bar one night, Roger. That is a famous story from back in the 70s, right?
Well, yeah, it taught me a very real life lesson. There's a big difference between falling asleep and passing out and waking up or coming to, which is what I did on that occasion. And it took me 40 years, but I did get the check back.
What impresses you? You look at Chris Goddard, you look at some of the champions we've had recently, some of the young players, Michael Thorpe, Bjornsson, so many young names. What impresses you when you look at this generation and how they just seem to show up on tour ready to win?
And isn't that really the story of the day? Mm-hmm. I mean, the training, the advancements in technology and coaching and teaching, the competitive experience they get, the way they can dial in equipment and learn more about their games. They come out and they're ready to go. And at one point, it was surprising to me that they could do that. But no longer. I mean, you expect the top flight guys, the Luke Clantons, those guys that come off out of college, they're ready to hit the ground running when they get to the tour.
Roger, we've often asked players on this show what was the sort of greatest tip or the greatest lesson they got along the way. What was your sort of light bulb moment as an announcer? What was the best piece of advice you ever got for doing that job?
Well, actually, it was the first producer I worked for, and only for a year, but Larry Cirillo was his name. And I was not under contract yet with NBC, but was asked to be involved at the Bob Hope Desert Classic in 91. And the problem being then is before cable, there was a 2-hour show Saturday and a 2-hour show Sunday. And they would schedule things so all the celebrities and Hollywood stars and all that would be at what they'd call the host course for Saturday and Sunday's round. But the celebs only play Saturday. And the problem was the leader could be on another golf course. They were played 4 different golf courses and they may never see the leader hit a shot. So they came up with RF cameras, which made it possible, and said, would you do this and send me to another golf course? The host course was Indian Wells, and the course they sent me to was Bermuda Dunes, 7-8 miles away. Well, I got out there, and we were supposed to have rehearsal, but my equipment didn't work. So they had to drive back 8 miles back to Indian Wells to get stuff to fix my equipment. Anyway, I had no rehearsal. The first words I uttered were on air. So I had no idea what they were talking about. The television has its own language, and I just felt like I was sinking in the ocean for those 2 hours. I went back to Indian Wells, and you guys know TV compounds. When a show's over, it's like turning on the lights and watching the mice run. You know, I mean, everybody's out of there. But I caught Larry Cirillo getting into his car, and I said, Larry, you got to help me. I have no idea what I'm doing. And he just looked at me and said, relax, just be yourself. That's all you've got to be. You know the subject matter, just be yourself. And probably that's the greatest lesson I was ever given as far as being on television.
Roger, what did you miss most? Not being inside the ropes, not walking with the final groups, not having the microphone in your hand?
Well, that's it. I miss seeing the shots and hearing the shots. You know, I've always had a pretty good rapport with galleries and so on, and people saying hi and this and that as I trundle along. And I just miss being around. It's in my blood. I'm a fan. And what can I tell you? I love golf, and I love the people who play it, and I love the way they play the game now.
What is it going to mean to you, Roger, to be at the memorial when it's not just another working week for you as a broadcaster, but it's 50 years since you won Jack's tournament?
It's kind of funny. When it was brought up to me by Tom Knapp, one of our execs, he says, you got to do the memorial tournament. And he goes, it's 50 years. And I got to thinking, and I said, well, you know what? If I'd have won the memorial tournament on the day I was born, I'd be on the senior PGA tour now. That's scary. It's been a long time. And I think I played, Jack and I were the only two players that I think I played the first 25 or so. And then, you know, I was no longer competitive and I was the oldest guy in the field, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I just quit playing. But so much has changed there. You know, I mean, I watch on TV, I see the clubhouse and facility now. Geez, I mean, it's like 3 times the size. And I see some changes on the golf course that have been made. Still looks very much the same, but he's tweaked and continually tweaked the golf course. So I'm fascinated to go see it and see how the guys play it now. It was really hard when we played it, I'll tell you.
Roger, thank you so much for taking the time, and please enjoy the next few weeks. We're so happy to have you back.
Thanks, guys, and I'm really looking forward to it. It should be fun.
Now, we're joined now by the host of Five Clubs on Golf Channel, Gary Williams. Gary, you're not exactly known as a wallflower on many subjects. We always enjoy having you on here. I'm curious what you make of Chris Goddard. Does he put himself into the conversation for you yet as potentially the next American superstar in this game?
Eamon, I don't know if I would go so far as saying superstar, because I think superstar is a very elevated space. I think he's a star, and I think there's a difference. And if you look at the United States Ryder Cup team over the last decade, even beyond that, most of them are stars. And I think he's going to be a guy who's going to be in a lot of those teams. The thing about Chris that I think is attractive and makes him, you know, a sticky asset for the PGA Tour, meaning people will stick around, watch what he does, is that he's brawny. He's artistic the way that he plays. I think he's got a little Lanny in him without the lip, and I mean that affectionately. But the other thing about him that I think he put people on notice last year, and it was even before this particular moment I'm going to reference. If you look at his season after January 22nd of 2025, he shot a final round higher than 70 one time. That was a 74 in the U.S. Open, where he still finished in a tie for 23rd. Only Scheffler had a better final round scoring average than him, and he shot 66 playing alongside Rory when everybody thought he would fade. And then he goes to the Open, and he doesn't just take it all in. He finishes third. I said it yesterday on the show. I think he's got Sunday drip. Eamon, that's what the kids say. You're well beyond that demographic. But I think that he's got chops. He played with Scotty this week. He shoots 64. He went low at the Sony on Sunday. I think he likes bright lights. He's a star, yes.
Gary, this is the first signature event of this season. It's got 18 of the top 20 players in the world. Has the tour delivered on the promise of getting the best players together more often at iconic venues?
Rex, I think for the most part, I think this year could be interesting, because when we talk about stars and superstars, and many of these guys who are in these events are that, but they're only a couple superstars, real draws, the people that motivate fans to make a point to be on the property. Television audience has been good, and Rory's a superstar. And we saw him choose not to play some signature series events last year. I think that's going to be the case this year. I do not think that this will go by the way of the World Golf Championship Series. And I also think we're going to see alteration to this platform starting next year. And we're anxious to see what it's going to be. No, but I think for the most part, it's delivered. But the most part is one thing, all of it, which means the most.
We appear to have lost Gary Williams there. He's actually exhausted his own Wi-Fi with the gas bagging right now. But hopefully Gary can get reconnected and join us again right now. I'm curious, there's one of the questions I wanted to ask Gary. Chris Goddard talked after winning on Sunday that the President's Cup team was on his agenda starting this year. And that was a real goal of his, to be on Brant Snedeker's team in Chicago at Medina. We both know that the decisions that go into putting people on teams aren't necessarily just performance related. With that in mind, is Patrick Reed on that team come the fall or not, since he is eligible?
I wish I could sit here and say he was, after the run that he's been on. Two wins, he finished runner-up in his only other start on the DP World Tour. It's clear he's going to get that elevated PGA Tour card going into next season. But since I was standing there when we informed Brant Snedeker at Torrey Pines 2 weeks ago that, oh, Patrick Reed's going to be in the mix for one of your picks, and the look of, I don't want to say shock, but mild surprise on his face that, what are you talking about? I think it's still a bit of an outlier. I think he still has to accomplish a little bit more, but we can sit and call him Captain America. We can sit and say how important he would be to that team, if not that team room. But it's the results that are going to matter. And you and I both know he's going to play a lot on the DP World Tour this year. He's going to give Brant a reason to say, no, I don't want you on that team.
Yeah, well, he's got to be considered one of the hottest players in the world right now based on what he's doing in Europe. Obviously, the dynamics that go into a team room and how players meld together is a big factor and all of this as well. I'm just really curious, if he does keep this hot run going, if he wins another one or two times in Europe, it makes it very, very difficult for for Brant Snedeker to say no, even if you're not necessarily competing against the best in the world on the PGA Tour, even if you're kind of off in the hinterlands, as they might say, it's still a performance that warrants a conversation whether or not Patrick Reed belongs on that team. Because if you don't take him and you lose, which seems a bit of a stretch for the President's Cup or the American team to lose, but still, it's a conversation that feels as though it's going to rumble on all summer.
And there's such a good comp going back just a few years ago. Ryan Fox didn't make the international team a few years ago when it was played at Quail Hollow. Probably should have been on that team. I'm not here to second-guess Trevor Immelman, who was the international captain, but his game set up really well for that particular golf course. But he played most of his golf almost primarily on the European Tour. I think it hurt him. This could be a bit of a breakthrough, but for both sides, the U.S. and the international side.
Well, with Gary's Wi-Fi has been reconnected. It cut him off because he was gas-bagging so much there in that last segment. But we're pleased to have you back. Gary, what do you think about this idea of whether or not Patrick Reed will be on the radar, or how high on the radar is he going to be when Brant Snedeker is making those choices for his President's Cup team?
I don't think, Eamon, it has anything to do with whether it's his trend line or his form or with respect to the way that Medina is going to be set up. I think that this is going to have to be consensus building, because this is a very different circumstance, as you guys know. And listen, I get it if there's pushback from fans who say, look, stop with the old boys network. How well has that worked, particularly in the Ryder Cup? But there is a, you know, there is something about him that creates some abrasion, friction with guys. And I think the makeup of that team. Now, I do think that there are some players, and nobody in particular, I think he's going to have to do consensus building. And the other thing about Patrick, for people who say all he does is win points, you know, early, yes. Later, not so much. And the President's Cup in Australia was a tipping point. And the reason why all those players, off of what had happened at the Bahamas, swallowed hard is because of who was the captain. Otherwise, I don't think they would have held their tongues.
All right, before your Wi-Fi shorts out again, I'm going to jump straight to this one. The idea that nine of the next 14 events, at least nine of the next 14 weeks, include a signature event or a major championship. At what point do we get to the point in time where we start asking the question, how much is too much?
I think that that's the balance that the tour is trying to figure out, because I think one of the objectives is for every week to feel very significant. And while I think that that exists for people who live in a very narrow lane and they follow why, you know, missing a cut or finishing sixth is going to matter when it comes to the FedEx Cup playoffs, there needs to be more gravity, more weight, I think, in their estimation to each event. So if all of them feel big, but there's less of them, that's how you can achieve that less is more.
The WM Phoenix Open, Gary, ran into the Super Bowl over the weekend, which wasn't the first time that's happened. Do you buy this argument that the tour ought to start after the NFL season, or do you think Brian Rolapp really ought to focus not so much on the audience of his last employer and focus on the audience of his current employer and just give golf fans what they want without regard to the NFL schedule?
Look, I think from all accounts, he is probably close to being an expert when it comes to the television space and viewing habits. Now, he was with the Monolith, and what they don't own, they will own soon enough. They did that to the NBA on Christmas Day. I do not think they should wait till it's over. Eamon, I think that they should step in, whet everybody's appetite between the conference championship games and the Super Bowl in the off week, and do it in a big way, not in a boutique-y way, not with the Tournament of Champions type of environment. And I would even suggest the waste management being the kickoff, and go big and then take a break. And then when football's over, you return after you've whetted everybody's appetite. One other addendum I would add to that, I would deepen the alliance with the DP World Tour and incentivize players after the tour championship and during the football season when the lane is narrower to go over there and make a lot of very good events in Europe in the fall even better.
Now, I want to stay with TPC Scottsdale on another issue they had last week. The PGA Tour cut field sizes pretty much across the board, the idea being they wanted to tell the Friday cut story. They wanted to make sure that was something they could focus in on. Well, Thursday and Friday's round went into the next day in Scottsdale. Is it time just to blow up the pace of play policy and start over?
No, it's time to start enforcing the pace of play format and the procedures. There's no way. Look, they hit less shots than all of us, many less shots than Eamon. And yet they still manage to play at a pace where every ball is found. You have a spotter for every golf ball. It's inexcusable that a field of that size can't get around that golf course or any golf course for that matter. This has nothing to do with field size. It has to do with the leniency that is provided to these players when it comes to not banging them shots and make it real.
On that subject of the tour kind of coddling players over the years, Gary, there were some interesting comments from Ryan Moore last week where he implied in an interview with Adam Shupak that the tour doesn't do enough, essentially, to protect guys who can't cut it out there anymore. Is that a sign of what Brian Rolapp is going to face when it comes to trying to make the tour a more cutthroat competitive environment as opposed to what it's always been, which is a member organization that is solely devoted to giving playing opportunities to those members?
Yeah, I would start with two words. Private equity. Private equity is not emotional. And when you make a choice to get into the business with private equity firms, they're not sentimental. They're not nostalgic. They're about one thing. And I've never believed that talent, any elite talent in any sport, has ever been denied because they've been wronged. It may take a little bit longer. And that's where I think that you need to be pragmatic and also realize that golf fans they're smart and they're dedicated. And if you want to create a tier system, then celebrate that second tier and really, really dig in on relegation and elevation and make it real. And the idea that, well, you know, I'm a name, I'm a brand, I'll get enough starts even if I'm not at that certain threshold because I'm valuable to them. No, I would limit the number of sponsor exemptions available to players who have already done a lot of things. Elevate and relegate in a real way. That's cutthroat. That's professional golf. Consequences for actions. If you're not good enough, go home on Friday. Or if you're not good enough at the end of the year, go get your job back.
All right, Gary, we'll get you out of here on this. The PGA Tour ran a promo spot last week during the WM Phoenix Open, essentially for the Players' Championship. And the tagline was, let's make March. Oh, March is going to be major. It's a not so subtle reminder that they want this to be the fifth major. What's your take on that?
Well, what I thought of when I saw the spot, I smiled. And that wasn't complicity. That wasn't, yeah, I agree. What I thought immediately was, who's going to come up with the meme first of superimposing Brian Rolapp's face over Sheriff Brody when he's tossing the chum into the water in Jaws? That's what I thought, because that's world-class chum for people to go, oh my gosh, I'm going to devour this. And it was, by interestingly and ironically enough, the smallest shark in the ocean with a very powerful voice, and that is Brandel Chamblee, who took a position that is very interesting that advances this conversation beyond what I thought it was going to be when I saw the spot. It's not a major, doesn't mean it can never be a major, but I think this is going to be interesting to see over the next, not only a couple of weeks, but really when it bubbles up, Players' Championship Week, because the question is going to be asked of players and obviously of the guy who approved the spot, the guy who's the boss now.
Gary, as always, thank you so much for your time, and I'm glad you're paying your Wi-Fi bills these days.
No, I was actually, my wife, it automatically cuts off if I talk too much. I'm surprised it didn't go out three more times.
Mine does too. We have that in common. Actually, mine cuts off when she gives me that look. I just know the look just to shut up and stop talking.
I know the
Thanks,
look.
Buddy.
See ya.
All right, a reminder, you can catch Gary Williams on Five Clubs every Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday right here on Golf Channel. Stick around. You won't want to miss our next guest as Peter Jacobson stops by for a past champ chat. The 1995 AT&T Pebble Beach Pro-Am champion relives some of his best memories on the iconic links.
Time now for Past Champions Chat as Peter Jacobson joins us. Peter, it's always great to see you. First things first, you're now at the age where you're getting parts replaced. You just had a knee replacement surgery. How's the recovery going?
It's going nicely. Well, Eamon, I started having body parts replaced at the age of 52. So as I look at my 72nd birthday in 1 month, I'm well into that category in my life.
I want to go back to 1995 when you won at Pebble Beach. And it was a one-stroke lead going down 18, but it probably felt pretty comfortable. What's that like to make that walk down 18, that iconic hole, knowing that you had this in hand after all these years?
Pebble Beach, I consider my home course because I'm from Portland, Oregon. And our family used to drive down and we would play in the summers at Pebble. So when I stood on that 18th tee, I felt comfortable. I felt like I was home, but I was nervous. Davis Love and David Duval were breathing down my neck. And most important thing on the 18th tee is just put the ball in play. We know there's a big body of water to the left and a lot of expensive houses to the right where you can't play from their backyard. So the most important thing was to hit a straight drive. And I think I hit one of the best drives of the day. Put it in the fairway, laid it up. I ended up making birdie on the hole to win. But clearly, easily one of the most exciting weeks of my career because I just love that event.
Was that the most memorable moment for you at Pebble, the win, Peter? Because you must have had a lot over the years with Jack Lemmon as well, where you didn't necessarily leave with a trophy, but you left with a lot of good memories.
I think, without a doubt, that's the most exciting moment, the win. But I think the most fun was when Jack Lemmon and I were playing with Clint Eastwood and Greg Norman at Cypress Point. And Lemmon hit his tee shot to the right and it hung on the edge of the cliff. And we went over and Eastwood goaded Lemmon into hitting the shot. But it was right. It was right on the edge, very precariously perched on the ledge down to about 80 feet down to the ocean and the rocks down below. And the four of us got in there. Lemmon got a wedge. Eastwood held his belt. I held Eastwood's belt. Norman held my belt. And legendary caddy Pete Bender held Norman's belt. And we had the safe shot in golf, the human chain. And believe it or not, Lemmon got it out of the ice plant back in the fairway. But that's the one thing I'll never forget about that event, playing with all the celebrities and the amateurs over the year. It was a celebration of golf, a festival of fun with all of those individuals. And yeah, I think it was the most important tournament to the PGA Tour because it combined everybody, athletes, celebrities, CEOs, and the best players in the world all playing together, supporting the game of golf and supporting charity.
Jake, I love the fact that you started and ended your PGA Tour career at Pebble Beach. Most people don't get to write that storybook ending. What did that mean to you?
It meant so much, Rex. I Monday qualified for the AT&T back when it was the Crosby. And as crazy as it was, I ran out after I qualified at Old Del Monte. I ran out to Monterey Peninsula Country Club, jumped out on the back nine just to be able to play a few holes because I was now going to play in at least one PGA Tour event. And out on that golf course, I ran into one Arnold Palmer, and he invited me to join his group. So that was an incredible moment for me to meet Arnold, to be able to go and say that I played the AT&T or the Crosby in my first event. And I specifically wanted to end my PGA Tour career at the Pebble Beach at the AT&T and spanned, I think, 6 decades of playing professional golf to begin and end at Pebble. That was pretty special.
I want to go back to something you said earlier about the AT&T and this event over the years being the most important to the PGA Tour. Why was it so important to you from a broader standpoint, not just your own competitive record? And do you think that's been diminished over the years, the importance that it held?
Yeah, I definitely think it's been diminished. Where else could we put together a golf tournament that combines the best players on the PGA Tour with executive vice presidents and CEOs from the companies that are title sponsors of the PGA Tour, put them out on a golf course together and play for a week at Pebble Beach, throw in athletes and celebrities that love the game of golf, And that mix created one of the most fun, one of the most important weeks of the PGA Tour a year. And I know things are morphing in different directions. The PGA Tour is not what it used to be. It's changing. I don't know what's going to happen in 27. We'll wait and see. But I see the focus is more on the players rather than how the tour started. The tour started, it was a really nice collaboration between players, community, and charity to support each tournament each week. And we're kind of moving away from that. I am and always will be a huge PGA Tour supporter. I'm bullish on the future, but I just want to make sure that we pay attention to how we got here and what we did to get here.
I want to stay on that topic. The conversation about what the schedule might look like in 2027 fixates on the idea that you want to play the best events during the best time of year. I think the indication there is maybe it'd be better if we played Pebble Beach July or August when we get guaranteed good weather. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've played in many Open Championships in awful weather, wind, rain, and I think that's what makes a creative major championship when you get four seasons in one day, to borrow a name of a song from one of my favorite bands, Crowded House. When you have a chance to test yourself in all different types of weather, inclement conditions, sunny, hot, on the best golf courses in the world, that's when you know that you've arrived. That's when you know that you're a great player. We can't all play in domed stadiums. We can't play in 75-degree weather with a slight breeze off the ocean. It just doesn't happen. And I think the tour right now maybe is guilty of trying to create the most idyllic situation for these 20, 25 tournaments. I think that's the wrong direction to go, but we will see. And don't forget, we've got four majors because that's where all the best players in the world compete against each other, year in and year out, throw in the players, which has the best field of the year, trying to manufacture 20 events. To put it this way, we have all these signature events that are so important to players, but we had some of the best players in the world skip them last year. So what's the sense in having them?
Among the changes that are underway at the PGA Tour is obviously fairly high-profile returns of Brooks Koepka, the imminent return of Patrick Reed later this year, both of whom left to go to LIV. Are you supportive of their return to the PGA Tour, Peter?
Well, let me just say this, Eamon. Players that left to go to LIV, I would never criticize them for taking that money and that generational wealth to be able to go and to better their situation. But let's not forget that these players, they knowingly and willingly broke the rules. And I do think them coming back to the tour, they have to suffer the consequences. And I applaud the PGA Tour for doing putting some penalties down. Personally, I think they should be stiffer. But I think it's good to unify the game. I think the PGA Tour has always been and will always be the strongest tour in the world. And don't forget, players come and players go. I remember when I first came out, if a Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, or Gary Player didn't play, people thought the tour was going to fold. And don't forget, most recently, there was a guy named Tiger Woods who kicked everybody's butt. Guess what? He doesn't play anymore. But the tour is and always will be stronger, and it'll grow and it'll thrive because the players come through and the players benefit just as much as the tour and the game does.
Jake, in your career, you served on the policy board. You were involved with a lot of these similar conversations as you came up through the ranks. I want you to put your policy board hat on. And if we go to 2027, and you mentioned a 2025 event schedule, what's the one or two things you want to see that the tour make sure they get right?
To make sure that they work to continue to give money to charity. Because if you think about it, Rex, why do these events happen in these communities? People want to volunteer to be able to support the charities in their communities. So I would say get the charity aspect right. Let's not leave them in the past.
You think it's fair to say, Peter, that a lot of players of your generation look at the current generation of stars and think that they've kind of lost sight of where the tour came from, that they think it's theirs to leverage or sell as they wish, rather than something that was put into trust for their generation to be passed along afterwards?
I'm not one of those. I don't think that way, Eamon. I think that obviously as we move through the future, as we progress in our business and in our careers, things do change. I'm so appreciative of the time I had on tour, and I'm very impressed with these young men on the PGA Tour, the way they give back and they do what they can to make the tour strong. So I tend to look at things positively, and I hope everybody continues to understand where we were in the past, where we are today, because that's going to help build and track where we're going to go in the future.
If you could give one piece of, let's call it, unsolicited advice to a young player that Eamon just mentioned, why is this week's event, playing with the amateurs at Pebble Beach, so important?
Because you never know who you're going to meet. One thing I always tell young players, first thing you do at a tournament is to go in and register. The second thing you do is to go to the tournament director's office, meet him and shake his hand and thank him and his staff for their efforts to be able to create this event that you're going to benefit from. And then in the AT&T especially, when you have the responsibility, when you're playing with a partner, and it could be there aren't many celebrities anymore, but whoever your amateur partner is, it's your responsibility to give that amateur partner the best experience he's ever had in golf. Because not only do you represent yourself and your family, but you represent the PGA Tour and the game of golf to that partner that day and that week. So that is just an essential part of this event and any pro-am we play.
Peter, it's always great to catch up with you. Hope the knee replacement surgery recovery continues to go well, and we see you back on your props pretty soon. Thanks for the time.
Thanks, guys. Good to see you.